This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
The Convoy. The Convoy represents a fresh approach to the story of the Battle of the Atlantic. It's also the first to deal with the more spectacular story of HG 76, a major turning point in the naval war. And it sailed, HG 76 sailed from Gibraltar to Britain in December 1941 and was specially targeted by the Germans. What's happened next has been brilliantly explained by Angus Constam in his book, The Convoy. Delighted to say that Angus joins us live on the line now. Good morning to you, Angus.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. So tell us a little bit about, set the scene, if you will. It's 1941. The war has not been going well for the British at this point, and I suppose we're talking supply lines, aren't we?
Yes, we are. To stay in the war, Britain relied on a steady supply of everything from raw materials like iron ore to tomatoes and foodstuffs. So they came from two places. They either came across the Atlantic from Canada or the United States, or from Africa or across the Indian Ocean. So a lot of these convoys from the south had to go from Gibraltar up where they gathered, and then went up to Britain. So this convoy was one of hundreds in the war, and I was wanting to write about the Battle of the Atlantic, and it's far too big a topic. So zooming in on one convoy gave you the chance to kind of explain what goes on. And I picked this one because it had a couple of unique features which kind of made it a bit of a turning point in the whole war.
And of course, 1941, the Luftwaffe can still maul anything coming out of Gibraltar or the Mediterranean, because they've got the air bases in Tunisia, you know, North Africa, and plus they're getting intelligence with German intelligence agencies, presumably based in Spain, because obviously Franco, although he's not directly involved in the war, is still a neutral country with Nazi leanings, you can say.
That's exactly it. They had Gibraltar Bay, as you know, Algeciras overlooks it, so they had Abwehr agents there with binoculars and radios and a direct phone link to the German embassy in Madrid. So they knew when things were happening. And then the big turning point for the Germans was the fall of France in the summer of 1940, which meant that they could then, Vice Admiral Dönitz in charge of the German U-boat fleet, could base them in places like Lorient, Saint-Nazaire and Bordeaux, or La Rochelle. And these U-boats, instead of being leaving from places like Kiel and Wilhelmshaven, were suddenly right on the Atlantic. They didn't have to make that voyage past where I live here in Orkney to get out into the Atlantic. They were on the Atlantic. So that was a big plus. But as you said, aircraft were important. And a lot of wine lovers have flown into Bordeaux, to Bordeaux-Mérignac airport. But they probably didn't know that in 1941, it was the base for three squadrons of Focke Wulf 200 Condors. And these were enormous long-range bombers, four-engine bombers that could range out 1,500 miles into the Atlantic, and they could shadow a convoy. They could find it, they could shadow it for up to a dozen hours and send back sighting reports, which went straight to Lorient, where Dönitz was based, and he could vector in his U-boat, so they could they knew where to attack.
And also, of course, Bordeaux, although you may think it is a wonderful wine port, etc., wine region, wine town, it's on a very large river, and it's on a very deep river, so it was acting as a port as well, which is why, you know, Cockleshell Heroes attacked it, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes, right. And the whole thing was the use of these bases was fantastic. They developed fantastic for the Germans. And essentially, the entire U-boat arm was based in these three ports on the French coast, two in Brittany and one further down near Bordeaux. So, late 1941, Hitler decided he had a directive in order to support Mussolini. Instead of concentrating, as Dönitz wanted, on the transatlantic convoys, he wanted to pick off the Gibraltar convoys, the one with the Gibraltar run from Gibraltar up to Britain or back. And it was essentially going right in front of German occupied France and the airfields there. So these had to run the gauntlet, and really to support Mussolini, the U-boats were directed there.
So on paper, this looks like the Gibraltar convoys in a hiding to nothing, because Germany's on the ascendancy. You've got a friendly power in Spain letting you look from Algeciras to Gibraltar, and I'm sitting in a studio literally a 25 minutes drive from Gibraltar, so I know of which I speak. You've got the fierce wolf packs, and obviously the German U-boats at this point are pretty much untouchable. You've got long-range or medium-range bombers who can pick up. It doesn't look good for it looks like you're literally a sort of fish in a barrel situation. So what makes HG-76's particular convoy, A, how many ships are in it, and B, what makes it remarkable and different?
Right. You're quite right there. It is sort of fish in the barrel. The last few convoys lost up to 10 ships. So a huge number of losses, about up to a quarter or a third of the convoys were getting lost. The U-boat concentration, and they, as I said, they knew when they were sailing, it was kind of a fish in the barrel. And for HG-76, Dönitz had concentrated a wolf pack of six U-boats. He would reinforce it from other ones sent from Saint-Nazaire, Lorient, and from the Atlantic as the convoy battle continued. But the convoy, he knew it was going to sail on the 14th of December. You could see the ships getting ready. And he was waiting to jump in it. The Wolfpack Sea Robber or Sea Robber or Pirate was concentrating off Cape St. Vincent in the bottom left of Portugal. So when the convoy sailed, it left Gibraltar just before 4 p.m. on the Sunday of the 14th of December. And imagine Gibraltar Bay. You say you live up, you live just close to it. You know the geography of it. That, imagine that bay filled with shipping. 32 merchant ships in the convoy. There were other ones assembling. There were warships patrolling outside. So those 32 merchant ships, they were carrying everything from iron ore to one went to Huelva had a shipload of Spanish onions. So they had this huge range of things, but they were all vital. Those onions are kind of vital in Britain, which basically is running out of supplies. And Dönitz, at this stage of the war, was winning the tonnage war. He was sinking more ships than the merchant ships than the Allies could build. So it was kind of a crucial point. But convoy HG-76, I said it was a turning point, and it was, because it had two things going for it. One was the escort commander, this guy called Commander Frederick Walker, or Johnny Walker, named after the whiskey. And he was an expert in anti-submarine warfare, but he hadn't had a chance to shine. He was, he'd been sidelined during the interwar years, and a few months before, he'd been given command of an escort group of small warships, corvettes and sloops, small stuff. And his job was to escort convoys. The British approach at the time was that on all accounts, the convoy has to get through, which meant passive protection of it. And that wasn't Walker's style at all. Johnny Walker wanted he said the best way to protect a convoy is to sink the U-boats, hunting it. So he would actually actively hunt down the U-boats rather than just defend the convoy. And that was a key thing. He was a far more aggressive commander, and this was the first chance he had to show how his tactics worked. His other big advantage was Audacity. Now, she was what the British called an auxiliary carrier. The Americans then called it an escort carrier. That's a baby aircraft carrier. She was tiny. She was converted from a German cargo liner, the Hanover, and the squadron leader in charge said they basically took the thing into Britain, stripped down all the superstructure and stuck a flight deck on top. And it was a very small flight deck. She could only carry half a dozen small fighters. So she didn't have much in the way of teeth, but she proved her worth. In HG-76, when she left, Audacity, that little escort carrier, was accompanying it, and she had four fighters, Martlet fighters, American supplied Wildcat fighters. And what they could do is they could, at dawn, imagine it, dawn's breaking, they could send up a couple of fighters, they could sweep around the convoy and looking for U-boats on the surface. They could also, when those Condors came, those long-range bombers to shadow it, they could fight them off or drive them off. So it had two big advantages. And the convoy sailed, like I said, on the Sunday, the 14th of December, and four in the afternoon, formed up at Gibraltar, headed out into the Atlantic. And the Wolfpack was assembling off Cape St. Vincent. But what the Germans did was they were in the wrong place, because the convoy Commodore, who was in a merchant ship, a retired admiral, basically headed left when he went out in the Atlantic. They scraped off the Moroccan coast, and then before heading out, and he sidestepped the U-boats. And it was only on the 17th of December when the first fighter sweep from Audacity goes up, they find one of these U-boats. And that's the thing. Before, U-boats could only really, they didn't have the speed to attack a convoy underwater. They had to do it on the surface. They could make 17 knots instead of about seven, which when seven submerged, 17 on the surface. So what happens at night, they'd attack it, but at daylight, they kept out of the way. They shadowed it from a safe distance. And with Audacity and with her aircraft, that was no longer an option. On the 17th of December, on the morning, one of these Martlet fighters spotted a U-boat. And true to form, Commander Walker sent out a group of four warships to attack it. And that, we're speaking, instead of just passively defending the convoy, he went out 30 miles from the convoy to hunt down this U-boat, pointed out handily by the circling aircraft, got it, attacked it, and sank it. U-131 was the first loss of the whole convoy battle.
Right. I mean that is quite a radical departure if you think about it, because a couple of points from that is one is, yeah, absolutely with the thing about the U-boats, because people tend to think that they spend their entire time underwater, sort of shadowing, you know, sort of three steps behind the last boat in the convoy. Not true. They spent the majority of their time, especially at night, obviously above water, because they weren't that submersible. But also, you know, rather than just sprinting up and, you know, you say they turned out and they headed towards Morocco and then went up, which is going to wrong foot them, because obviously if you are a U-boat commander, you're going to think, well, this convoy is going to try and, you know, make the maximum amount of knots and get to the UK as soon as poss. And also the surprise of, being, you know, actively hunting, because if you go actively hunting and you don't have air recon, then you run the risk of having your escort ships becoming divorced from the convoy itself.
Yeah, that's it. And the other thing was, they'd used, if you hunt with one escort, you're trying to escort being a small anti-submarine ship, you're trying to find the convoy, you find a U-boat, and you're using sonar, or ASDIC as the British called it at the time, it's kind of like an ice cream cone shaped pulse coming, sonic pulse, I mean, a sound pulse coming out from beneath the ship. When you're right over the U-boat, that pulse vanishes. You've lost the U-boat. And for about, there's a 30-second window when a smart U-boat commander can dodge out of the way. So what Walker did, by hunting in groups, one could pin it with sonar, and then the others, and you could radio in the others to go on top of it and attack it. So that was a big breakthrough. It happened the next day, the morning of the 18th, same thing happened. They found another U-boat, they attacked it with a group of ships and sank it. So we already have, at a time when merchant convoys were losing about anything up to 10 or a dozen ships, these 32 ships had so far survived without any loss. This was going to change, though. It got really heated. But two U-boats lost was unheard of. Actually, there was a third from the wolf pack because a British and Australian hunting group found one off Cape Saint-Vincent, or the U-127. So you've got three U-boats sunk from this wolf pack for no advantage for the Germans.
And what's the reaction for the Germans? Because they must be thinking, hang on a second.
Things very rapidly. Though.
Yeah, I'm going to say, they must be thinking, what on earth is going on here? Because, you know, we've been attacking with virtual impunity up to this point, and suddenly they've lost sort of two U-boats in 2 days.
Yeah, they got their own back, though. The next evening, on the 19th, they sank a British... a Lend-Lease, an old American destroyer, the Stanley, now British flagged, and they sank a merchant ship. But Commander Walker, as aggressive as ever, wasn't going to take this line down. He'd invented this new tactic called Operation Buttercup, which meant he would flood the whole area with star shells. He'd send warships down so the U-boat couldn't survive on the surface. It had to dive. And once it was had dived, it was just doing those 7 knots underwater, and they could locate it and sink it. And he pounded the place he found it in his ship, the Stork. He pounded it with depth charges, brought it to the surface, and if that wasn't enough, he then rammed it. So it was a kind of crazy, it was a sort of Laurel and Hardy moment where the two ships, the U-boat and the surface ship, were circling each other, shooting at each other with deck guns until Walker's sloop got the right angle and managed to ram it and sink it. And actually, as it was sinking, he depth charges again. So that was a fourth loss. But by this time, they'd lost an escort and they'd lost a merchant ship. But still, pretty good going for the convoy. And as it progressed... The aim was to, it would take them about 12 to 14 days to reach Britain. So it's a long journey. And units should have doubled down at this stage, but instead he was sending more U-boats to intercept the convoy.
Yeah, I mean, this particular convoy, you've managed to sort of work off what diaries and reports to give it that sort of immediacy.
Yeah. You have reports from all the ships, the warships, the U-boat logs, the ship logs, letters, everything. You can piece together what happened quite nicely. The crucial thing was on the 21st, they had another big night battle and Audacity was sunk. She was keeping away from the convoy and she was sunk by a U-boat, by U-751, and she was lost with 76 of her crew. This was a big blow, but by then she'd really proved her worth. The escort carrier was a big boon for convoys. The following day, that evening, early that night, the Germans woke up and they suddenly found they'd lost signals from U-567. That was one of the reinforcements sent a German U-boat ace, yeah. Engelbert Endras. He was the guy who was the second in command of Gunther Prien's U-47 that sank the battleship Royal Oak in Scapa Flow, right out of my study window here, in Orkney, right at the start of the war in October 1939.
Yeah.
But Endras was a U-boat hero. But he was kind of tired, worn out, and he allowed himself to get caught, depth charged, and sunk with all hands. The next day, on Christmas Eve, on the 24th of December, the British come in within range of land-based air cover, and the convoy, at that point, doing its calls off the attack. But by the time the convoy reaches port, it's lost two merchant ships in all of its 32, which is phenomenally successful. It's lost two warships, but the tally of U-boats sunk, four in all, five if you count the one from the U-boat group, from the wolf pack, was an unheard of tally. So instead of the Allies losing the tonnage war, it was now the Germans. They were losing U-boats faster than they could build them.
And it's not just the hardware they're losing, but you mentioned that they're losing the trained personnel. They're losing the U-boat aces. And those people who have maybe been training the Kriegsmarine on the run-up to war and know what they're doing, it's very difficult. It becomes increasingly difficult, obviously, for Germans to train up people because they're in a war now, and there's not an awful lot of time for training, because the thing is to get people out there and to try and attack the convoys.
That's exactly it. 941 was a bad year for the U-boat aces. A lot of them, Kretschmer, Preen, and so on, were captured or sunk or killed. And Endras was just one of those. But by the time the convoy got home, the Allies had two allies now, because America had joined the war. This took place a week after Pearl Harbor. But they'd figured out two things. One is more aggressive tactics really pays off, thanks to Johnny Walker and HG-76. And also the escort carrier was the way forward. It could really help hunt U-boats. So it was a real, HG-76 was a real turning point of the war. And it's a great story because it encapsulates all the drama, all the excitement of the whole Battle of the Atlantic in one convoy.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been fabulous to read those reports, those first-hand reports, because a lot of this takes place at night or at dawn or at dusk, which is, you know, dramatic, to put it mildly.
It is, but it also means that you get a lot of contradictions. People say this ship is on the left, this ship is on the right. And the thing is, a historian, you have to play a bit of a detective game, trying to figure out in your mind what goes on. It helped that back in the day I was in the Navy myself, and I kind of know my port from my starboard, but still it's a confusing thing, but it's such a great story, and it was just such a fun book to write.
And what became of Captain Johnny Walker? Did he see out the war and see out the rest of his life in comfortable retirement?
I'd like to think he did, but no, he wouldn't retire. They gave him a hunting group of escorts. He went out hunting U-boats, and then he essentially died in command in 944. He wore himself out. His family, his doctors were telling him to give it up, go and get a shore job, and he didn't. He kept on doing what he liked best, hunting U-boats, and he had a huge tally of them by the end of the war. So he was Britain's most successful U-boat hunter.
What do you hope that people to learn about this? They get an idea that the Battle of the Atlantic wasn't just all the sort of the cruel sea and these massive convoys coming across from the States, but it was these close actions and the aggressive hunting of the U-boats.
It's the drama of it as part of it. The cruel sea is great, and it relives some of the boredom of it all, going up and down escorting convoys where nothing happens. But at this time of the wars, things were definitely happening, and that I wanted to capture some of the drama of it. And it's such a dramatic story that it really needed telling. So and if I can capture anything from it, it's just to encapsulate some of the tenseness, the fear, the drama involved in it. And I certainly wouldn't have liked to be sitting in a merchant ship doing 7.5 knots, churning the 2,000 miles from Gibraltar to Britain, waiting for a torpedo to hit you at night. Must have been a horrible experience.
Well, it's a rainy and overcast day here today on the Costa del Sol, so any listeners down there today can poodle down and have a look at Gibraltar in the Bay of Algeciras. It must have been somewhat what it was like on that day in December when the convoy HG-76 began its groundbreaking convoy to the UK. The book is called The Convoy, Taking the Fight to Hitler's U-Boats. It's by Angus Constam, who we're talking to today. Angus, do you have a website? Can people find you online?
Yep, angusconstam.com, and you can easy to find. And also the publishers, Osprey Publishing, have their own website and whatever else.
The very great Osprey indeed. We like Osprey a lot. This book is called The Convoy, HG-76, Taking the Fight to Hitler's U-Boats. I shall have a look around next time I'm down in Gibraltar and just raise a glass of something to the memory of HG-76. Angus Constam, thank you so much for your time today.
An absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.